But can anything which is be attributed to that which is not?
Impossible.
And all number is to be reckoned among things which are?
Yes, surely number, if anything, has a real existence.
Then we must not attempt to attribute to not being number, either in the singular or plural.
The argument implies that we should be wrong in doing so.
But how can a man either express in words, or even conceive in thought things which are not, or a thing which is not without number?
How indeed?
When we speak of things which are not, are we not attributing plurality to not being?
Certainly.
But, on the other hand, when we say what is not, do we not attribute unity?
Manifestly.
Nevertheless, we maintain that you may not, and ought not to attribute being to not being.
Most true.
Do you see, then, that not being in itself can neither be spoken, uttered, or thought, but that it is unthinkable, unutterable, unspeakable, indescribable?
Quite true.
But, if so, I was wrong in telling you just now that the difficulty which was coming is the greatest of all.
What, is there a greater still behind?
Well, I am surprised, after what has been said already, that you do not see the difficulty in which he who would refute the notion of not being is involved, for he is compelled to contradict himself as soon as he makes the attempt.
What do you mean? Speak more clearly.
Do not expect clearness from me, for I, who maintain that not being has no part, either in the one or many, just now spoke and am still speaking of not being as one, for I say not being, do you understand?
Yes.
And a little while ago I said that not being is unutterable, unspeakable, indescribable. Do you follow?
I do, after a fashion.
When I introduced the word is, did I not contradict what I said before?
Clearly.
And in using the singular verb, did I not speak of not being as one?
Yes.
And when I spoke of not being as indescribable and unspeakable and unutterable, and using each of these words in the singular, did I not refer to not being as one?
Certainly.
And yet we say that, strictly speaking, it should not be defined either as one nor many, and should not even be called it, for the use of the word it would imply a form of unity.
Quite true.
How, then, can anyone put any faith in me? For now, as always, I am unequal to the refutation of not being, and therefore, as I was saying, do not look to me for the right way of speaking about not being, but come, let us try the experiment with you.
What do you mean?
Make a noble effort, as becomes youth, and endeavor with all your might to speak of not being in a right manner, without introducing into it either existence or unity or plurality.
It would be a strange boldness in me which would attempt the task when I see you thus discomfited.
Say no more of ourselves, but until we find someone or other who can speak of not being without number, we must acknowledge that the sophist is a clever rogue who will not be got out of his hole.
Most true.
And if we say to him that he professes an art of making appearances, he will grapple with a sandra tortara argument upon ourselves, and when we call him an image maker he will say, pray what do you mean at all by an image, and I should like to know, Theatesis, how we can possibly answer the younker's question.
We shall doubtless tell him of the images which are reflected in water, or in mirrors, also of sculptures, tea pictures, and other duplicates.
I see, Theatesis, that you have never made the acquaintance of the sophist.
Why do you think so?
He will make believe to have his eyes shut, or to have none.
What do you mean?
When you tell him of something existing in a mirror, or in sculpture, and address him as though he had eyes, he will laugh you to scorn, and will pretend that he knows nothing of mirrors and streams, or of sight at all. He will say that he is asking about an idea.
What can he mean?
The common notion pervading all these objects, which you speak of as many, and yet call by the single name of image, as though it were the unity under which they were all included, how will you maintain your ground against him?
How, stranger, can I describe an image except as something fashioned in the likeness of the true?
And do you mean this something to be some other true thing, or what do you mean?
Certainly not another true thing, but only a resemblance.
And you mean by true that which really is?
Yes.
And the not true is that which is the opposite of the true?
Exactly.
A resemblance, then, is not really real, if, as you say, not true.
Nay, but it is in a certain sense.
You mean to say, not in a true sense?
Yes, it is in reality only an image.
Then what we call an image is in reality really unreal.
In what a strange complication of being and not being we are involved.
Strange, I should think so. See how, by his reciprocation of opposites, the many-headed sophist has compelled us, quite against our will, to admit the existence of not being.
Yes, indeed, I see.
The difficulty is how to define his art without falling into a contradiction.
How do you mean, and where does the danger lie?
When we say that he deceives us with an illusion, and that his art is illusory, do we mean that our soul is led by his art to think falsely? Well, what do we mean?
There is nothing else to be said.
Again, false opinion is that form of opinion which thinks the opposite of the truth. You would assent?
Certainly.
You mean to say that false opinion thinks what is not?
Of course.
Does false opinion think that things which are not, or that in a certain sense they are?
Things that are not must be imagined to exist in a certain sense, if any degree of falsehood is to be possible.
And does not false opinion also think that things which most certainly exist do not exist at all?
Yes.
And here, again, is falsehood?
Falsehood, yes.
And in like manner, the false proposition will be deemed to be one which asserts the non-existence of things which are, and the existence of things which are not.
There is no other way in which a false proposition can arise.
There is not, but the sophist will deny these statements, and indeed how can an irrational man assent to them, when the very expressions which we have just used were before acknowledged by us to be unutterable, unspeakable, indescribable, unthinkable? Do you see his point, Theaetetus?
Of course he will say that we are contradicting ourselves, when we hazard the assertion that falsehood exists in opinion and in words, for in maintaining this, we are compelled over and over again to assert being of not being, which we admitted just now to be an utter impossibility.
How well you remember, and now it is high time to hold a consultation as to what we ought to do about the sophist, for if we persist in looking for him in the class of false workers and magicians, you see that the handles for objection and the difficulties which will arise are very numerous and obvious.
They are indeed.
We have gone through but a very small portion of them, and they are really infinite.
If that is the case, we cannot possibly catch the sophist.
Shall we then be so faint-hearted as to give him up?
Certainly not, I should say, if we can get the slightest hold upon him.
Will you then forgive me, and, as your words imply, not be altogether displeased if I flinch a little from the grasp of such a sturdy argument?
To be sure I will.
I have a yet more urgent request to make.
Which is?
That you will promise not to regard me as a parricide.
And why?
Because, in self-defense, I must test the philosophy of my father Parmenides, and try to prove by main force that in a certain sense not being is, and that being, on the other hand, is not.
Some attempt of the kind is clearly needed.
Yes, a blind man, as they say, might see that, and unless these questions are decided in one way or another, no one, when he speaks of false words, or false opinion, or idols, or images, or imitations, or appearances, or about the arts which are concerned with them, can avoid falling into ridiculous contradictions.
Most true.
And therefore I must venture to lay hands on my Lather's argument, for if I am to be over-scrupulous, I shall have to give the matter up.
Nothing in the world should ever induce us to do so.
I have a third little request which I wish to make.
What is it?
You heard me say what I have always felt, and still feel, that I have no heart for this argument.
I did.
I tremble at the thought of what I have said, and expect that you will deem me mad when you hear of my sudden changes and shiftings. Let me therefore observe that I am examining the question entirely out of regard for you.
There is no reason for you to fear that I shall impute any impropriety to you, if you attempt this refutation and proof. Take heart, therefore, and proceed.
And where shall I begin the perilous enterprise? I think that the road which I must take is...
Which, let me hear.
I think that we have better, first of all, consider the points which at present are regarded as self-evident, lest we may have fallen into some confusion, and be too ready to assent to one another, fancying that we are quite clear about them.
Say more distinctly what you mean.
I think that Parmenides, and or whoever yet undertook to determine the number and nature of existences, talk to us in rather light and easy strain.
How?
As if we have been children, to whom they repeated each his own mythosaur story. One said that there were three principles, and that at one time there was war between certain of them, and then again there was peace, and they were married, and begat children, and brought them up, and another spoke of two principles, the moist and a dry, or hot and a cold, and made them marry, and cohabit. The Eleatics, however, in our part of the world, say that all things are many in name, but in nature one. This is their mythos, which goes back to Xenophanes, and is even older than there are Ionian, and in more recent times Sicilian muses, who have arrived at the conclusion that to unite the two principles is safer, and to say that being is one and many, and that these are held together by enmity and friendship, ever parting, ever meeting, as the severe muses assert. While the gentler ones do not insist on the perpetual strife and peace, but admit a relaxation and alternation of them, peace and unity sometimes prevailing under the sway of Aphrodite, and then again plurality and war, by reason of a principle of strife. Whether any of them spoke the truth in all this is hard to determine. Besides, antiquity and famous men should have reverence, and not be liable to accusations so serious. Yet one thing may be said of them without offense.
What thing?
That they went on their several ways disdaining to notice people like ourselves. They did not care whether they took us with them or left us behind them.
How do you mean?
I mean to say that when they talk of one, two, or more elements, which are, or have become, or are becoming, or again of heat mingling with cold, assuming in some other part of their works separations and mixtures, tell me, Theaetetus, do you understand what they mean by these expressions? When I was a younger man, I used to fancy that I understood quite well what was meant by the term not being, which is our present subject of dispute. And now you see in what a fix we are about it.
I see.
And very likely we have been getting into the same perplexity about being, and yet may fancy that when anybody utters the word, we understand him quite easily, although we do not know about not being, but we may be equally ignorant of both.
I dare say.
And the same may be said of all the terms just mentioned.
True.
The consideration of most of them may be deferred, but we had better now discuss the chief captain and leader of them.
Of what are you speaking? You clearly think that we must first investigate what people mean by the word being?
You follow close at my heels, Theaetetus, for the right method, I conceive, will be to call into our presence the dualistic philosophers, and to interrogate them. Come, we will say, ye, who affirm that hot and cold, or any other two principles are the universe, what is this term which you apply to both of them, and what do you mean when you say that both, and each of them are? How are we to understand the word are, upon your view? Are we to suppose that there is a third principle, over and above the other two, three in all, and not two? For clearly you cannot say that one of the two principles is being, and yet attribute being equally to both of them. For, if you did, whichever of the two is identified with being, will comprehend the other, and so they will be one, and not two.
Very true.
But perhaps you mean to give the name of being to both of them together?
Quite likely.
Then, friends, we shall reply to them. The answer is plainly that the two will still be resolved into one.
Most true.
Since, then, we are in a difficulty, please to tell us what you mean when you speak of being, for there can be no doubt that you always from the first understood your own meaning, whereas we once thought that we understood you, but now we are in a great strait. Please to begin by explaining this matter to us, and let us no longer fancy that we understand you when we entirely misunderstand you. There will be no impropriety in our demanding an answer to this question, either of the dualists or of the pluralists.
Certainly not.
And what about the asserters of the oneness of the all? Must we not endeavor to ascertain from them what they mean by being?
By all means.
Then let them answer this question. One, you say, alone is. Yes, they will reply.
True.
And there is something which you call being.
Yes.
And is being the same as one? And do you apply two names to the same thing?
What will be their answer, stranger?
It is clear, Theaetetus, that he who asserts the unity of being will find a difficulty in answering this, or any other question.
Why so?
To admit of two names, and to affirm that there is nothing but unity, is surely ridiculous.
Certainly.
And equally irrational to admit that name is anything.
How so?
To distinguish the name from the thing implies duality.
Yes.
And yet he who identifies the name with the thing will be compelled to say that it is the name of nothing, or if he says that it is the name of something, even then the name will only be the name of a name, and of nothing else?
True.
And the one will turn out to be only one of one, then being absolute unity, will represent a mere name?
Certainly.
And would they say that the whole is other than the one, that is, or the same with it?
To be sure they would, and they actually say so?
If being is a whole, as Parmenides sings, every way, like unto the fullness of a well-rounded sphere, evenly balanced from the center on every side, and must needs be neither greater nor less in any way, neither on this side nor on that, then being has a center and extremes, and, having these, must also have parts,